The Gospel of Luke, chapter 5, please. For some reason, Pastor Rob, I'm thinking that I should get one of those Mexico mission shirts. I'm not sure why, but Luke, chapter 5. Pastor Rob prayed for us and asked him that the Lord would bless our time. Can I ask you a question? When I say these names, what comes to your mind? Bill Gates. World famous names, world renowned names that you hear them and the name just travels all over the world. Bill Gates. Elvis Presley. Wow. I've never heard anybody say dead before when I said Elvis Presley. Were you a fan? World famous, name known all over the world, Pastor Rob Taylor. What do you think of when you hear that name? Somebody said dead. I don't know what that means. Simon Peter. When you hear that name, what do you think of? For some of us, we do you Bible students, you hear the name Simon Peter and you think of the word doubt. You think of the word erratic, up and down, prior to Pentecost. You think of an imperfect individual. You think of somebody that was an impetuous man. When you think of Simon Peter, you think of perhaps, and rightfully so, and we'll balance it out, but rightfully so, in some cases, inconsistent. Not always on track, not always level-headed, up and down. The word wavering comes to mind. And sometimes in his life, not always, but sometimes wavering. But there's a flip side, another side of the coin when it comes to Simon Peter. There was a man of extreme passion. That in as much as he was up and down and erratic and impetuous and imperfect and inconsistent, nonetheless, he had a tremendous passion and love for Jesus. Didn't always say the right thing. Didn't always do the right thing, but one of the things that you can never doubt about Simon Peter is his intense love for Jesus Christ. You can't question that. You can't question the fact that I've called Simon Peter the man of the ABCs. Adventurous. He steps out of the boat, he begins to walk on water, and what does he do when he takes his eyes off of Jesus? He starts to sink, but ladies and gentlemen, he stepped out of the boat. The other 11 stayed in the boat. Let's not forget that adventurous side of him that said, I'll step out of the boat. The B, bold, never hesitated to state his position. In fact, Simon Peter was the one that spoke what everybody else was thinking. He was bold. Thirdly, C, a man of courage. That courage. Wasn't intimidated by his surroundings. Wasn't intimidated by people. Wasn't intimidated in the book of Acts by a government that said, don't speak in the name of Jesus anymore. But a man of courage that would look at the ruling council of the day and say, you tell me, who should I obey, God or you? A man of courage. So I ask you, what about your passion? What about the intense love for Jesus that we can relate, with imperfect, doubt, inconsistent, impetuous? I can relate. But do we relate to the other side, though? Is our ABCs the same as his ABCs? Adventurous, bold, courageous, or my ABCs, perhaps your ABC, A, average, just an average walk with Jesus. B, the letter B, kind of bland. You know, flat. You know, have you ever taken a drink out of a soda that's been sitting out with the cap off? And there's no fizz to it. For some of us, is that our relationship with Jesus? Just average, just bland. Or worse yet, the letter C, compromise. Living in both sides of the world. Coming to church and having an appearance of godliness, but lacking the power thereof. Because we're caught up, tangled up. The short time that we're going to spend together, I've entitled our short time together, "What If?" Just those two words. What if? We're going to look at Luke chapter 5. We're going to look at Luke chapter 6. And lastly, Luke chapter 9. And each one will be, what if? What if in Luke chapter 5, what if you took a step of faith? What if? But wait a minute. You have faith. I have faith. But wait. I'm talking about the kind of faith that lives their life as if God is telling the truth. Living the life of faith that makes it like it is so, even when it's not so, because it ought to be so, because God said so. That kind of faith. The kind of faith that is not so much connected or tethered to feelings, but to your function. So before we look at chapter 5, I want you to understand this next sentence, this next phrase I'm going to give to you. The kind of faith that I'm asking you to consider taking a step in is the kind of faith that is measured, listen carefully, measured by a decision that you make, not by an emotion that you feel. There's a difference. Too many of us, I think, look at what God is calling us to do, the kind of man, the kind of woman God wants us to be, and we go by our feelings. The kind of faith I'm asking you to consider, what if you take a step of faith? It's the kind of faith you decide on that may not be connected to a feeling, because understand this, you can have feelings of faith, but not walk in faith. And then you can not have feelings of faith, but take a step of faith. So I'm asking you to consider, what if? What if today, what if this week, you as Simon Peter decided, I'm going to step out of the boat. I might sink, but at least I'm going to step out of the boat. Look with me at Luke chapter 5 and let's see a man that decided to take a step of faith, to actually do something with a decision. Verse 3, Jesus, he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and he asked him to put out a little from the land. He sat down and he taught, watch this now, Jesus is in the boat of Simon, and he's teaching the multitudes from the boat. But watch this now, verse 4. When he stopped speaking, now he's not talking to the multitudes. Now he looks at Simon. Launch out into the deep and let your nets down for a catch. Listen carefully for 1 minute. There are messages that God has for the church. There are times that God will use a speaker to communicate a biblical truth to the general body of Christ, like Jesus does in this verse. But what I'm asking you to consider is to consider that Jesus then looks at a person and he says, now, I'm not just talking to the general body. I have a message for you. Would you please consider the possibility that as you're here today, that God has a message for you, not just Calvary Chapel Brentwood in general, but you, the single mom, the unemployed, the struggling marriage, the teenager. What if? What if you actually took a step of faith? You see, it doesn't take any faith to do what's possible. It doesn't take any faith to do what you can do. But here is Jesus looking at Simon Peter and saying, I have a message for you, Simon. I want you to go out into the deep, and I want you to throw the nets down and watch what he says. He doesn't say, let's go see what happens. Let's go drop the nets and go for a catch. Jesus has given Simon Peter a bit of instruction that doesn't really make sense. Because if you know culture, if you know your Bible history, you know that, and being gone over to Israel a couple of times and talking to some of the people there, here's what you find out, that historically and traditionally, the folks that did the fishing there in the Sea of Galilee, they didn't fish out in the deep. They fished closer to the shore. And they didn't fish in the daytime. They fished at night. So what is it that Jesus is asking Peter to do? Everything that is comfortable for him, it's the opposite. Everything that is common to you, put it aside. If we're going to take a step of faith, it's going to have to be that you say, may not make sense to me. God may ask me to go somewhere that I've never been. God may ask me to talk to somebody that is so different than me that I look at him and I go, I can't relate to that person. But what if, though? What if? What if God is calling you to take a step of faith in such a way that you go, oh, that don't feel right to me. That don't sound right to me. I'm not that experienced. I don't know the Bible that well. I haven't memorized the entire book of Deuteronomy yet. Maybe once I memorize an entire book in the Old Testament, maybe I'll be ready then. Pastor Rob is the only one that knows the whole book of Deuteronomy by memory. I don't know anybody else. So what's God asking you to do? When it comes to taking a step of faith, in just a moment, we're going to look at three different areas that I find, after being in ministry over 20 years, that is common to just about every Christian. But at this point right here, Jesus is asking Simon Peter to take a step of faith that just doesn't make sense. Didn't see it coming. And so Simon Peter then does what I think I would do and probably what you would do. So Jesus says in verse 4, launch out into the deep. And let down your nets for a catch. And what's the first two words in verse 5? But Simon. You know what that means? Simon Peter's like this. Listen to Jesus. And Peter's mind is going, this ain't going to work. This ain't going to work. I can't do this. If Simon Peter is going to obey Jesus, Simon Peter's got to get over three things. He's got to get over a mental challenge. What do I mean by that? It doesn't make sense up here. It's not logical. Remember what I said to you? The kind of faith I'm going to ask you to consider is not so much tethered, connected by the emotion that you feel, but it's measured by a decision that you make. So he's got to get over this mental challenge. It doesn't line up with me. It's an emotional thing. I don't feel comfortable doing this. This doesn't feel natural to me. I've never done this before. And thirdly, there's a relational challenge that he's got to get over because there's other fishermen watching him. There's other people that are taking note. And there's this emotional and relational thing that Peter's got to get over that says, if I take this step of faith, what are people going to think of me? If I actually obey God, if I actually go to my neighbor, if I actually tell my coworker, if I actually whatever, what are people going to think? What's my parents going to think? What's my boss going to think? What's your boyfriend going to think? And so Peter is just like you, just like me. But Peter. So verse 5 says, but Simon answered and said to him, and I want you to notice what he calls him, Master. We've toiled all night and we've caught nothing. Stop there for a second. What is Peter saying? What's Simon telling him? Jesus, you got a good heart, that it ain't going to work. That ain't going to work. You see, I've already tried it. I've already gone down this road. I've been out there all night long, and there's no fish out there. It doesn't, do you understand? There is a mental, there's an emotional, there's a relational challenge that all of us have to work through when God puts it on our heart to step out of the boat and actually trust Him with something. But what if, though? What if it's time for you? You've been walking with Jesus for how many years, and your walk has become average, it's become bland, maybe even to the point of compromise, and maybe today, God's brought me here to say He's got a message for you that you ought to look in the mirror and go, God, what if? What if it's me? And then, of course, the wheels start turning. Oh, I'm too old. I'm too young. I'm too inexperienced. I don't have the background. I don't have the education. I don't have the training. I don't have the money. That's what Peter's saying. It ain't going to work. But here is now, in my opinion, because there's certain words that over the course of time, I've tried to explain, but you go, it's still coming up short. And one of them is the word faith. I know Hebrews 11:1, faith is being sure what you hope for and certain what you, I know that. But to me, this, Luke chapter 5, verse 5, is faith in action. Because in the first part of verse 5, but Simon answered and said to him, it ain't going to work. The next word, however, in my Bible, it says, nevertheless. At your word, I will let down the net. Nevertheless, because you said so, let's go fishing. Doesn't make sense to me up here. All the ducks don't line up. I don't have the money. I don't have the whatever. But because you've asked me to trust you, to take a step of faith, let's do it. What if you did that? What if you actually took God that serious and said, I'm going to make a decision based upon my knowledge of the Word of God and not just how I feel? What if? Imagine that. Three areas. Write this word down in the area of your feelings. What if you actually took a step of faith and trusted God with your feelings and did what was right in the area of feelings, such as, what are you angry about? What are you so upset about? What's bothering you? I know what's bothering you. It's in James chapter 4, verses 1, 2, and 3. I know why you're angry. I know why you got that chip on your shoulder. I know why you got that discontent look on your face. I know why, because James chapter 4 says this, you want something and you can't have it. That's why you're angry. You're not getting your way. It's not going your way. Somebody disagreed with you. Imagine that. Imagine somebody has a different way of doing something. Imagine that your wife said, I don't think so. Imagine that. Imagine she's right, always. Imagine that your boss said to you, no, we're not going to do that. Why do you think, maybe not here, I don't know, but down in South Florida, we have traffic jams. And you're up on 995, you're on the Turnpike, you're on Commercial or Oakland Park Boulevard, whatever, and you're driving, and next thing you know, a car just cuts you off. Why does that bother us? Why does all of a sudden go, oh, God. Why? I'll tell you why. Because I cut off a bunch of other people to get this spot, and this is my spot. This is my spot. How dare you take my spot? what happens, and again, I don't know here, but maybe you go to a bank and you walk into the bank and there's 20 windows and there's one teller working and there's a line of 50 people and you walk in and you go, I can't believe. Why? Because you are an important person in your mind. You got places to go, you got things to do, and you're not getting your way. Don't these people know who you are? How dare they hold you up? That's why you're angry. You're not getting your way. Now, let me ask you this. You walk into a bank, and there's 20 tellers and no line, and all 20 women, all 20 people are fighting for your business, and they're all going, come over here, come over here. You don't get mad at that, do you? You're getting your way. Things are going your way. What if, though? What if? Just what if? You walk into a bank and there's a line of 50 people. And what if you actually took a step of faith and trusted God with your emotions? And you got in that line and you said, God, here's the reason why. I need to pray. I need to pray. What if you carried around with you a 3x5 card with Bible verses on it, knowing you're going to be delayed somehow or other, so that when the delay comes, your feelings don't blow you up, but you pull out that card and you go, this is an opportunity for me to just memorize a verse. What if? What if? I had a guy say to me, I was telling him about, because he's complaining a car cut him off and got upset. I told him, I go, well, instead of, why don't you pray for that person? They said, I did. I prayed for them. I said, God, would you bring fire down from heaven on that person? No, that's not the right prayer. That's just not. In the area of your feelings, what about this? Listen to this, another word. What if you actually took a step of faith in the area of your finances? What if? I'm going to meddle in your business now. What if? What if you actually took a step of faith with your checkbook and you said, God, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have a penny. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be able to feed my family. See, what we do, I think, by mistake, sometimes we consider the provision as greater than the provider. And sometimes we make the mistake in thinking that because we have a job, we can put food on the table. You don't put food on your table because you got a job. You put food on your table because you have a God in heaven that loves you. You have a house. Listen to this. You know why you have a house? Because there's a tree. Somebody went out to the forest, cut a tree, shaped it down into a board, sold it to a Home Depot. Some contractor went and bought a bunch of these boards, put them all together, and you live in this building now. And you paid $20,000 a month mortgage on it. And so why is there a tree? Because God created the tree. But we look at the house, we look at the car, we look at the clothes, the provision, and we go, as long as I have this, as long as I have a car, as long as I have a job, as long as I have a house. The only reason you have any of that is because there's a God in heaven. What if, though? What if you actually took a step of faith and did what was biblical with your finances? We all get freaked out. And again, it's just because I talk to so many people. Money is a big, scary subject to many of us. Do you know that in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus said, you cannot serve both God and money. In some translations, it says you cannot serve both God and mammon. Do you know what mammon was in the Old Testament? Mammon was a false god. Just like Baal, just like Ashtoreth, mammon was a false god. Baal, the god of intellectualism. Worship this god Baal with your brain. Ashtoreth, the god of sensualism. Worship this god through sex. The god of mammon, worship this god through materialism. So think this one second. See if it not be so with you. If you have a dollar bill, Do you know that that's not just a piece of paper? Do you know that Jesus looks at money and gives it a spiritual entity identification? And I believe it to be so because for many of us, if I have enough of those $1 bills in my name, to my name, I'm okay. I'm at peace. God is good. God is providing. If I get a raise, oh man, I'm so happy. Why? I have enough of these little pieces of paper. I give so much authority to these little pieces of paper that I say to these pieces of paper, you have the authority to make me happy, and you have the authority to scare me to death. Because if I don't have enough of these little pieces of paper, I am freaked out. God hasn't changed. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. But I'm looking at the provision, and I'm giving greater authority to the provision than I am to the provider. And so when I don't have enough of these little pieces of paper, my attitude changes. I'm short. I'm angry. I'm bothered. I'm troubled. Like, can't you spending all the money? Why are you spending all the money? We're going to lose our... And these fearful, anxious thoughts come. But what if? Just what if? What if you said, God, it's all yours. I'm not going to trust in money. I'm going to take my eyes off the provision and put them on the provider. What if you trusted God with your feelings, your finances? Thirdly, what if you actually trusted God with your future? You ever wake up in the morning or before you go to bed at night and you're just all worried about tomorrow? And we do the what if. What if I lose my job? The single people say, what if I have to be single all my life? And then, of course, the married people. I didn't say nothing. Maybe you've said that. I don't know. What if I have to be poor all my life? What if I lose my house? What if I and tomorrow becomes this incredible monster that growls at us and we just kind of shrink back in a corner? Do you know what you've been given? You've been given today. Today. The book of James says, tomorrow, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Jesus said, why are you worried about tomorrow? Why are you worried about what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat? Isn't life more valuable than that? You know what Jesus is saying? Why are you worried about tomorrow? God would say, if I let you wake up tomorrow, you ain't got nothing to worry about. If I don't let you wake up tomorrow, got nothing to worry about. Either way, when our kids were small, we lived in Las Vegas, Nevada. We would take our kids up to Disneyland in California, and we'd go on I-15, and part of the drive is up in the San Bernardino Mountains. It's pretty high hills, and the clouds would come down, and it would be very foggy, and you could only see just a 20, 30, 40 feet in front of you. So then what do? Do you just stop? And you're immobilized because you can only see 30, 40 feet in front of you? No, you make adjustments. You slow down, put your hazards on, put your low beams on. And that's all you can see. But fascinating enough is this. If you keep driving, you always see 30 feet in front of you. It's just 30 feet in front of you, but you keep driving. But here's me, though. Here's me. What's at 31 feet? What if at 40 feet, there's a cliff? I'm scared. No, just keep driving. What if at 100 feet, there's a hole in the road and I fall into it? You'll find out. Just keep driving. You'll find out. Just keep driving. So what is the date today? The 10th? June 10th? You know what you've been given? June 10th. And you know what June 10th is? 30 feet. That's it. But what's that 35 feet? I don't know. You'll find out. When God is ready to show you 35 feet, 40 feet, he'll blow away that fog. But what if you just trusted him with today? What if instead of worrying about tomorrow, you actually enjoyed today? What if? What if you actually were nice to your spouse and you just went, had lunch and laughed and enjoyed, and then tomorrow get all freaked out, but not today. Just enjoy today. What if? What if? What if you took that step of faith? What if Luke chapter 6? So I've asked you to consider, and you can read Luke chapter 5 and see the end of it and see that God really blessed Peter for taking that step of faith. But Luke chapter 6, not a step of faith, but what if you actually took a step of obedience? What if you actually obeyed God? And we'll look at a couple of areas, but look at Luke chapter 6 and verse 46. Jesus says in verse 46, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do the things which I say? Whoever comes to me and hears," would you underline that word hears? That word actually means whoever comes to me and understands what I'm saying and does them, that's key, "I will show you whom he's like. He's like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. And when the flood rose and the streams beat vehemently, tore up that house, beat against that house, and it could not shake," couldn't shake it, couldn't bring turmoil because it was founded on the rock. Jesus is laying out a principle that he says, let me tell you about the person that obeys what I say. You're going to look at that. There's another group of us. But this group of which he's speaking, he says, there's somebody that hears what I'm saying, listens to me, understands, and then the word does, that word does them is the word without delay, he commits to abide, commits to remain in what I'm saying. So he says, there's a group of people that will listen to my words, understand what I'm saying, but then without delay, without any excuses, without thinking about this or that or whatever, commits to doing what I said. That person, I'm going to compare him to a person that builds a house on a rock. And I want you to notice that he doesn't say, the person that hears the things that I'm saying and does them ain't going to have no problems. Doesn't say that. Yeah, problems. And that's what this signifies. The rain comes down, the rivers rise, and the winds beat against that house. That's problems. That's suffering. That's difficulty. But in the midst of that, in spite of that, Jesus said, there's somebody that is going to choose to still obey me even though it's stormy out. Even though it's painful, even though the husband is being mean, even though the wife is being disobedient and rebellious, even though the teenager is being defiant, even though the money's not there, even though whatever, you fill in the blank, still chooses to obey me. This person, even though there's turmoil, will continue to stand. So what if? What if? In spite of whatever it is that happens in life, you say, I'm still going to obey God. What if? The struggle with it and the challenge with it is in verse 49, but he who heard and did nothing is like a man who builds his house on the earth or the sand without a foundation against which the stream beat vehemently. Immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. Both heard the words. There'll be somebody here today that you heard me say, maybe God has a message just for you. And what if you took a step of faith and you go home and you go, that's me. God, it had nothing to do with church, got nothing to do with that preacher, has everything to do with me being a Christian man, a Christian woman, a Christian teenager, and just choosing to glorify you with my life, and so I'm going to do it. And the problems will come and the difficulties will come, but you will supersede and you'll be more than a conqueror because you're building your life upon the rock. But there will be somebody here that says, what a waste of time. I don't even know why I'm here today. I don't even know what I'm doing here. I don't even know why I came here. Somebody promised you a free lunch after service, and so that's why you're here. Yeah, hurry up, get this thing over with. He says, there'll be somebody that hears these words of mine and just blows them off. Doesn't take them serious whatsoever. That person, this is the words of Jesus now. I will compare that person to somebody that goes out onto the beach. And you build a sandcastle before? If you build a sandcastle today out on the beach, do you expect it to be there tomorrow? There's no stability. There's no depth to it. There's nothing to hold it together. There's nothing that's going to be substantial that when the waves come and when the wind blows, it's going to stand firm. No, it's going to get blown over. And Jesus said, the person that hears these words of mine and doesn't do them, that's what I compare him to. Somebody just goes out on the beach, builds a house out on the beach with no foundation whatsoever. It ain't a house, it's a shack. When you think of the word shack, do you think of strength and stability? Just a bunch of boards nailed together. He said, that's the person that hears my words. So quickly before we run out of time, take a step of obedience in what area? How about this? Just submitting to the will of God. Oh, I don't know what the will of God is for me. Oh, you do. You do. Husband, you know what the will of God is for you in your relationship. What's the will of God for you in your relationship to your wife? You are, as a husband, to love your wife, how? Just as Jesus has loved you. So how you doing with that? What if you didn't look at her actions, you didn't notice her attitude, you didn't just hear her tone of voice, but what if your faith was based on a decision to obey God, not on the emotions that you feel because she just don't respect me? But what does God say? Husbands, love your wives. How? Just like Jesus has loved you. How many conditions has Jesus placed on you, husband, before he loved you? Have you, husband, ever disappointed God? Have you ever failed God? And has God ever said to you, unless you change, unless you stop this, then don't you dare even bother coming to me. Not so much. Ladies, and isn't it funny? Isn't it funny, really, that for us as husband and wife, the Bible only has one command. Many commands as a Christian person, but as a husband and as a wife, you only got one command. Husbands, love your wives. Ladies, what is your command as a Christian wife? I didn't hear anybody say anything. Any volunteers? Submit to your husband. In how many things? Unless Acts chapter 4 and Acts chapter 5, unless they're asking you to do something that's contrary to the word of God. Right. Do you know that he's only given us one thing as a husband and wife? Why? Because we're sheep. Can't do a whole bunch of things. Can't. Sheep aren't that smart. You ever seen a sheep in a circus? Horses, elephants, dogs. You ain't never seen a sheep jump through a hoop. Can't stand on his back legs. It's just not that bad. So he just gives us one thing. How are you doing? Children, again, a lot of things as Christians, but as children, obey your parents in the Lord. What if? What if? What if we just did that? What if we stop looking at what the other person is doing, how they're treating us, how they're behaving, and I looked in the mirror and said, God, I'm going to obey you. As for me and my house, I'm going to serve the Lord. I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know how you're going to handle this, but as for me and my house, I'm going to serve the Lord. What if? What if in the area of obeying God, what if you took a step of faith in obedience to God, in the area of sharing the gospel? What if? Imagine if you actually went to work tomorrow. And in a right way, in a proper way, in a way that would be allowed, that you're not going to get fired, but at the right time, you actually took a step of faith, obeyed God, and shared the gospel with somebody at work. What if? What if God put it on your heart to look at the, or to go to the person that lives next door to you and invite them to come to church? What if? And you go, no. What if that's God's will for you? Do you know that over in the Old Testament, over and over and over again, how many times did God say to the people, you bunch of stiff-necked, rebellious people? Do you know what we would say today? Why are you so stubborn? Why do you refuse to obey God? I had my friend give me a little bag of popcorn here. You ever wonder, like, how does this work? See, I ponder these deep philosophical kind of things. And how is it that you put this thing in the microwave And something happens to it? How is it that you can put this flat little bag and you end up with this? How did that work? How did it happen that this little bag of popcorn, bag of corn, because that hasn't popped yet, how did it go from this to this? Which one is thicker? Notice now, the one on the right, on this, on your left, has more substance to it. But it's the same thing, though. This big bag came from this little bag. How did that happen? Two things. This little bag, this flat little bag, you put it in the microwave, and some microwaves started to hit it. It started to get hot. So you applied heat to this flat little bag. And as the heat attacked the hard, stubborn, stiff-necked kernels of corn, it started to suck out that which was on the inside, the moisture. As the moisture was sucked out, and as the heat continued to be applied, they started to explode. And come to find out, that little tiny kernel of corn, there was something greater on the inside that was waiting to be revealed. That could only be revealed as it was exposed to heat and as it allowed that which didn't belong in there to be taken out. And as it surrendered to the process, that's key, surrendered to the process, bam, it popped. And that which was on the inside that was being held back by a hard outer shell, it was being detained and held in place by the external, it was blown away and it finally came to be everything that it was designed to be. And so consequently, you have this. However, you open up this little bag right here, and you pour this into a bowl, and tragically, what do you find that sometimes is left at the bottom of the bag? Unpopped kernels of corn. I ponder these things, and I ask myself the question, What happened? Why didn't you pop? What's the problem? Everybody else popped. Everybody was exposed to the same rays. Why didn't you pop? Don't you understand? If you allow yourself to go through the process, you can become greater than what you are right now. But what did you do, little kernel of corn? Did you look at everybody around you popping and say, I ain't popping? Little bit of rebelliousness there. Little bit of a hard heart going on there for some reason. Are you disappointed in something? Why are you refusing to obey God? And so you dump this out and you got a, or even worse yet, have you ever been eaten and come to find out one of those little hard kernels of corn, you bite down on it and it just like almost cracks your tooth. You ever experienced that? What do you do with that? You just spit it out. What good is it? What do you do with it? What do you do with that kernel of corn that said, I'm not letting the outside be broken. I'm going to hold on to who I am. What do you do with it? How do you use it? Of course, you go to the book of Revelation where Jesus said, got to be hot or cold, because if you're an unpopped kernel of corn, my translation, I'm going to have to spit you out. What about obeying God? What about that possibility? What about being at the place in your life where you actually say, I've been called by God to be a witness. I've been called by God to represent God. I'm the preview of heaven. I'm supposed to let my light shine. That's for all of us. It doesn't matter if you're a one-day-old Christian or you're a 100-year-old Christian. You're a witness. You are the light. You're the example. You're, again, like I said, the preview. You've been to the movies and you see the preview, and based upon what you think of the preview, you determine, do I want to see that movie, or is that, that's the dumbest thing. I wouldn't pay a nickel to see that. Well, you're the preview of heaven. We go to work and people ought to look at us and say, if that's what heaven is like and you're just a preview, I got to see the rest of it. That's the idea. The third area and the final area, Luke chapter 9. Would you go there with me? We're going to have to rush through this. But there's three people here. Now, what if you actually took a step of faith that wasn't based on emotions that you feel, but just a decision you make? What if you took a step of obedience and submitted to the will of God? Lastly, in Luke chapter 9, what if you actually took a step and prioritized Jesus? Kind of encapsulates the whole thing. It happened in verse 57, Luke chapter 9, as they journeyed on the road, that someone said to him, and please note now, there's somebody that says, Lord, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said to him, foxes have holes. The birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Have you ever noticed that there's sometimes that somebody will come to Jesus and say something or ask a question, and the response from Jesus is just completely out from left field? You go, what? The guy, look at verse 57. There's a guy that comes to Jesus and he says, Lord, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus looks at him and he says, foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man doesn't have a place to lay his head. Now, if you're that guy, you're going, what? I just said I want to follow you. What is it that Jesus is saying? Do you understand that there's going to be a time when it's not comfortable to follow me? Do you understand that there's some times that I'm going to have you do something, it just doesn't feel comfortable? There will be a time that we have an event, a crusade, an outreach, where at the end of the evening, everybody goes home to their nice warm bed. You and I, we're going to sleep under the stars. Do you understand there's going to be a time that you ask me something and I may not answer you? Do you understand there might be a time that you have questions and doubts and fears about something and I'm just going to look at you and say, just trust me. I'm going to be comfortable. So before you commit to following me, do you understand my relationship with you, your relationship with me is not just based on me making sure that you're comfortable, that you're happy, that you like everything that I'm doing. Sometimes it's a matter of a decision. I choose to follow Jesus even though it's uncomfortable because it's right. It's just right. Did you notice, however, in check out verse 59. Here's the other one. He said to another, now this one Jesus recruits, follow me. But this guy says, Lord. Isn't that funny? Both of them, you know what the word Lord means? Master of everything. This guy says, Lord, master of everything, me first. Hold on a second. You're the master of everything. You're in control of everything. You're the creator of everything, but me first. Lord, let me go and bury my father. Jesus said to him, let the dead bury their own dead, but you go and preach the kingdom of God. Now, this guy, Jesus, is saying to him now, you're going to have to consider your relationships. You want to go back and bury your father. Now, that sounds pretty normal, doesn't it? Jesus says, no. Sounds kind of cold. But the problem is that the guy's father isn't dead yet. Because Jesus says to him, let the dead bury their own dead. When have you seen a dead person burying a dead person? He's talking about a relationship. I know what you're saying. You have this thing going on and you want to do this in the area of relationship, but you're calling me Lord. But you're saying you first. What if this afternoon you looked at your finances, your relationships, your everything, and you said, I'm going to make Jesus first. Some of us, what we do is we go, nah, Jesus is not number two. He's like one and a half. He still ain't number one. And so here this guy says, I want to follow you. I will follow you. I'm not saying I'm not going to. I'm not saying I'm not going to walk with you. I'm just saying that right now I got relationships going on. And Jesus said, no, not so much. The last one. Another one said, same thing, master of everything. I'll follow you. Again, me first. Let me go and bid them farewell who are at my house, my family. Jesus said, no one having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. Please notice in verse 62 that Jesus did not say, no one who has put his hand to the plow and looks back will not go to the kingdom. He didn't say that. He just said, you start walking with me and you start looking back at the things you gave up, you're going to just be out of place. Feel weird, double-minded, divided. Want the things of the world, but you want me. You're just divided. You're just not going to fit. Here's tradition. Culturally, somebody is going to move out. They're going to go to college back in the day, whatever. They go, hey, I'm going to be moving out. I'm going to be leaving. They'd have a party for this family member. It wasn't just a one-hour party. This was like a seven-day event. And this is now where you, mom, dad, I've decided that I'm going to move out and I'm going to go to college. Son, daughter, are you sure you want to do this? I don't think you should do this. I don't know if you should do this. I'm going to go. And so Jesus is saying now, you're going to follow me, but you're going to go back home and they're going to divide you. They're going to start telling you about all of the things that you're going to give up. And you're going to start questioning. Maybe I made a mistake. And so Jesus says, when you put your hand to the plow, don't look back. Once you decide to walk with me, you're either with me or you're against me, one or the other. I remember being in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I remember working for a company, Martin and Harris Construction. My superintendent was a man by the name of Pat Warren. I came to him and company that you just die to work for. Great company. Making really good money. And I came to my superintendent, Pat Warren. I told him, I said, hey, listen, Pat, I just want to tell you that I'm going to be leaving in a couple of weeks, and I just wanted to give you my 2 weeks notice. You're leaving? Where are you going? And this is when the Lord had called my wife and I and our three kids to leave Las Vegas and come to Florida and start Calvary Chapel, Fort Lauderdale. I said, where are you going? I'm going to Florida. What? Going to Florida? To do what? We'll start a church. I'm going to go start a church in Florida. I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hey, you ever been to Florida? Well, I've been to Arizona. It's the furthest east I've ever been. You've never been to Florida? Never been to Florida. He goes, you ever heard of a palmetto bug? Because I've been to Florida. And he said, by the way, I don't know if you know this or not, but we had plans for you. We had plans for me. We can move you up in the company. Really? Yeah, we're going to give you a company truck. What kind of truck? And do you know that like that, man, my mind starts going, maybe Florida can wait. Maybe, no. Pat, I appreciate it, man, but God's called me to go to Florida. So what is it for you? What is it that the Bible calls you to throw off the things that are hindering you and the sin that so easily entangles you, but you're holding on to it and it's keeping you, and in your heart you're going, I need to, I should, I'm going to, I ought to. But you don't, because whatever reason. What is it? And you love God. Like I told you in the beginning, Simon Peter, a man that was imperfect, impetuous, inconsistent, but loved God with all his heart. He's a man that still walked with God, even though we're not perfect. Okay, so we don't do it all perfect. But is that what's keeping you? Is that the excuse? You finally throw off the apathy in your life, the bland life, the compromised life, to finally become that adventurous, bold, and courageous Christian that steps out of the boat and says, I can't play this game anymore. I can't be dumb. I'm not going to be double-minded anymore. I'm a Christian woman. I'm a Christian man, and I'm going to stand for the things that God's called me to. Whoever decides that they're not going to be my friend anymore, not going to be my friend, but I'm going to choose to honor God in every area of my life. Someday. Do you know that procrastination has actually killed people? Put off going to the doctor. Do you know that procrastination has killed relationships? Do you know that? Do you know that procrastination has killed dreams? Because, yeah. For some people, their favorite day is someday. Someday. No, what does the Bible say? Today is the day. You're not guaranteed tomorrow. I leave you with this. A man was sitting in his office one day, and he's sitting behind his desk, and he opens a drawer in his desk, and he finds this stub, receipt. Of all things, man, it's for a pair of shoes that he took to the shoe repair shop 5 years previous. And he goes, oh my goodness, I forgot that I took these pairs of shoes to the shoe repair. I wonder if they still... Nah, they wouldn't. There's no way. There's no way that they would still have my shoes. I'm going to go check. So he goes to the shoe repair shop, and he comes up to the counter, a little embarrassed, a little weird. Puts a receipt on the counter, and he says to the guy, listen, hey, this is kind of strange, and I feel really awkward asking you this, but 5 years ago, man, I brought you a pair of shoes to get fixed, and I just completely forgot, and I'm sure, I am positive you don't have them, but I just thought, hey, you know, let me just take a chance, and so I know you don't have, and the guy goes, let me go check. Now, I know you don't. Let me go check. I don't know. Let me go check. Okay, but I know you don't have them. All right, well, let me go check. So the guy goes back in the back. He's gone for a few minutes, and the guy's thinking, I'm going to waste the time. So the repairman is coming back and empty-handed. And so the guy's thinking, I knew it, man. I knew you didn't have them. So he says, I apologize for wasting your time. I don't know what I was thinking. I knew you wouldn't have my shoes. And the guy goes, oh, no, we have your shoes. They'll be ready next Thursday. Procrastination. It begins with you making a decision today that if you've never given your heart to Jesus, that you go, I know what is right. I know what I should be doing. I'm going to make a decision today to open up my heart, invite Jesus into my life, and begin a new relationship with him. You may have been coming to this church for a long time, but have you ever just said, I need to do this. I need to come up to the front. I need to come to the pastor. I need to come to somebody and say, I want to receive Jesus. I want to make him the Lord of my life. Make sure you do that before you leave.